The feeding of the 5,000 is one of the earliest stories we teach to our children. It's the only story, apart from the crucifixion, that appears in all four of the Gospels. I think we're drawn to it from a young age for several reasons, probably. It's John's Gospel that gives us the detail of the boy who has the bread and the fish that he shares with Jesus out of his generosity. It's rare for a child to be singled out in the Bible as exemplary in some way. I liked to imagine I would have been that boy. It's also a miracle story that I think is easy to be in awe of. What if we could defy every scientific law by taking a piece of bread and breaking it in half, and then having those halves, then having those new halves? We could just keep breaking and having and sharing until there's food for everyone. I think there's something extravagant about the story too, because it didn't have to happen. The disciples' suggestion to Jesus to send the multitudes into surrounding villages for food was completely reasonable. It's not like they're in a terrifying storm that Jesus needs to calm. It's not like a little girl is about to die and Jesus needs to heal her. It's not like a man is riddled with a legion of demons that Jesus needed to cast out. This is kind of simple, unnecessary, extravagant. It's both basic, provision of the most straightforward of food staples, and extraordinary, from little, a great abundance. Why did Jesus do this? Why defy Occam's razor? There is a much simpler solution for feeding this crowd. Why waste a miracle here? And then also, why do all four Gospels tell this story and not the Gerasene demoniac or the raising of Lazarus? What is so special about this particular story? In trying to answer that, I think we're helped a little by Matthew's Gospel in particular, which Karis read so beautifully earlier. Nope, Justin, sorry. In which the retreat to the deserted place is in direct response to the events in the verses before. The passage starts out, "Now when Jesus heard about this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself." When Jesus heard about this, the lectionary starts us in the middle of things. What Jesus had just heard about was the death of John the Baptist. Seems to me Matthew might want us to read these two stories together. Herod had arrested John the Baptist, and in one drunken and debaucherous night during a banquet, John was summarily executed. Matthew tells us his head was brought in on a platter. His disciples came and took the body and buried it, and then they went and told Jesus. Now, when Jesus heard about this, he withdrew from there in a boat to a deserted place by himself. So Jesus goes to this deserted place in response to the news of John's death. There are several times in the Gospels that Jesus is said to be going to a deserted place. Each time he goes, there are different circumstances, though the same motivation seems to drive every retreat that he has. There are many circumstances that drive us to the deserted place. Like Jesus here in Matthew, it may be the death of a friend or family member. It may be fear of the unknown or anticipation about the future. Maybe the utter exhaustion of life amidst pandemic, or uncertainty about a decision. We sing about many of these circumstances here at Dayspring in what is maybe our unofficial family song. If your heart needs mending, come away. If your soul needs tending, come away. Come away with me to a place where you can be in a quiet, slower time, in a simple state of mind. Come away with me and rest now. Come away. Withdrawing, retreating, coming away. It implies a starting place, a place of uncertainty or angst or liminality, a place of fear or pain or grief. For Jesus, the starting place, the place from which he designs to withdraw, is the world of Herod, an imperial world of governors, client kings, local elites, a brutal arm of the Roman Empire, ordered by a scarcity mentality and domination by status quo. Herod's world is a world of profanity in which life consists of nothing more than buying and selling, class and order, status and power, measuring and trading, silencing and even murdering the truth tellers. Note that Herod's story in Matthew, just like the feeding story that follows it, is a story of a banquet, of people eating together. But as Stanley Hauerwas points out, Herod has a banquet as a show of power to provide food for those who already have food. This is Herod's world. This is Herod's imagination. And I think maybe this is one of the most important ways we could talk about Jesus in the Gospels. He operates with a different imagination. I remember hearing someone describe where the imagination in us lives. He said, the imagination is the place in us where our head meets our heart. And that reminds me, of course, of the 19th century Russian Orthodox Saint Theophan the Recluse, who taught his followers that to pray is to descend with the mind into the heart and there to stand before the face of the Lord. And that all sounds right to me. Let's consider that that is the place of Christ-soaked imagination. And maybe that's what prayer is, at least in part, a surrender to the imagination of the kingdom of God. Jesus, throughout the Gospels, operates with a different imagination, an alternative imagination. Jesus withdraws for lots of reasons throughout the Gospels, but perhaps most saliently, he withdraws to descend with his mind into his heart to reimagine the world into which he had been sent. We are born, all of us, largely into a world that possesses Herod's imagination, an imagination of greed and scarcity in which there's not enough to go around and we better protect what's ours, an imagination of violence and power in which we have to fight for more and vanquish any threat, an imagination of fear and lies in which truth makes one vulnerable and vulnerability leads to death. Herod's imagination has been passed down from generation to generation. I think it's the air we breathe. It's the goldfish bowl in which we swim. It's how things have always been. It's the status quo. But Jesus withdrew to the wilderness, and the crowds withdrew with him to the wilderness. This was to be no solitary withdrawal for Jesus, and Jesus is not fazed by that. And in the wilderness, Jesus put his hands on sick people. And in the wilderness, Jesus took bread and treated it the way we see him later treat his last meal, as sacrament. In the wilderness, Jesus took a crowd of seekers out of the profane imagination of Herod and immersed them instead in sacrament. Where the imagination of Herod is an imagination of scarcity, Jesus' imagination is an imagination of abundance, in which compassion leads to generosity and eyes open to the great provision of God. Where the imagination of Herod is an imagination of violence, Jesus' imagination is an imagination of healing, of giving life and sustenance to all. Where the imagination of Herod is an imagination of lies, Jesus' imagination is an imagination that proclaims the truth that God, not empire, not power, not sword, God is eager to give us everything that we need, as Isaiah says, without money and without price. Jesus offers the crowds an alternative world where compassion overturns status and stands in stark contrast to imperial brutality. Given all this, is it any wonder that when the disciples come to Jesus to tell him to send the crowd away for food, that Jesus insists that they feed them? Because the disciples are proposing sending the crowds to return to the other world for sustenance, a world in which food must always have a price, must always be worked for, must come only from the sweat of one's brow. Jesus has come to give an alternative imagination to the people, much more in line with what the prophet says. Why do you spend your money for that which is not bread, and your labor for that which does not satisfy? Listen carefully to me and eat what is good, and delight yourselves in rich food. Incline your ear and come to me. Listen, so that you may live. In the feeding of the large crowd, Jesus demonstrated that the world is filled with abundance and freighted with generosity. This is Jesus' imagination. I think it's important for one more point to be made for us, the Church of Day Spring. We must not think of Jesus' wilderness as a safe, quiet place, a bucolic retreat of rest and relaxation. We here tend to value beauty and simplicity and retreat, and that is good. And places like Day Spring and many monasteries and retreat centers tend to highlight that side of withdrawal, the resting, the getting away from it all, the retreating. But when we read this story, when we sing Come Away, when we come to Day Spring or Cedar Break or Christ in the Desert, we shouldn't forget where such wilderness withdrawing leads. After all, John the Baptist was also a wilderness guy, and we remember very freshly what happened to John. The Israelites were a wilderness people, formed in the crucible of their wandering. Jesus launched his ministry from 40 days in the wilderness, marked by intense testing by the devil. The alternative imagination Jesus cultivates and proclaims in the wilderness here in Matthew with the feeding will eventually result in a clash with the empire. We see in the life of Jesus what the dominant imagination does, Herod's imagination does, to the true embodiment of the Jesus imagination. Such wilderness reimagination ought never to be thought of as escape from the world, getting away from it all. Withdrawing in the way of Jesus is a reorientation that propels us back into Herod's world with a Christ-soaked imagination. I need to remind myself in this season that I need a true withdrawal in the way of Jesus. I'm a natural withdrawer. Maybe you are too. But my natural withdrawing is much more about escape or numbing, distraction, ignoring all the chaos and pain that's swirling around me and inside me just for a moment or two. But the crowds who withdrew with Jesus were led to acknowledge their need, their sickness, their hunger. Much of what I find I need, especially in these days of pandemic, is what the first step in Alcoholics Anonymous teaches, an admission that we are fundamentally powerless, and that our lives are fundamentally unmanageable. So much of contemporary American life is a frenzied attempt at managing what is ultimately unmanageable. Maybe this is one of the gifts we might rediscover in this season of pandemic, that we have little control over much of what happens in our lives. But even though we can't control the world around us, we do have a say as to what imagination we cultivate. And that's the invitation today, to descend with the mind into the heart and there stand before the face of the Lord, allowing a new imagination to emerge. Modern day saints knew this sort of withdrawal and reimagination. People like Fred Rogers, who would remind us that every child is beloved just as she is. People like Dorothy Day, who would remind us that attachment to the life of Jesus means perpetual nonviolent resistance to the powers of oppression at play in our world today. People like Martin Luther King, who would remind us that equality in our society is not something that happens by accident, but by will and action and intention. These and many other 20th century guides in the way of Jesus knew the way withdrawing with Jesus would send a person, a community, back out into Herod's world. When they wrote the final verse of our family song, our friends Bert and Kurt must have been anticipating the season of pandemic in 2020, the same summer that the lectionary would bring us Matthew 14. That last verse says, "As the days grow longer, come away. As the night grows stronger, come away. Come away with me to a place where you are free to ponder and remember the way of deep surrender. Come away with me and rest now. Come away." I want to invite you now to join me. Allow your mind to descend into your heart. Pray with me the prayer that our Lord himself taught us. Our Father, who art in heaven, hallowed be thy name. Thy kingdom come, thy will be done, on earth as it is in heaven. Give us this day our daily bread, and forgive us our trespasses, as we forgive those who trespass against us. And lead us not into temptation, but deliver us from evil. For thine is the kingdom, and the power, and the glory forever.